extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partner in soccer. It's a Monday. It's Matt Doyle. It's been coming, Doyle. You've been in Madrid. I've been in Kansas City. Two wonderful cosmopolitan places in this world. But we're back for a massive show in one of the best MLS seasons of all time. Coming up, of course, the best thing we saw from MLS Match Day 26. Also, chaotic neutral weekend in an epic Supporter Shield race. We had an MLS Cup rematch, a seesaw game in Cincinnati between Cincinnati and Charlotte, and opportunities for LA Galaxy RSL to join the fray with Miami out. We'll handicap every team's chances of winning the Shield and tell you what happened. Plus, Brian White, Facundo Torres, and Jordan Morris star. Stick around. All the games broken down. Plus, we look ahead to the weekend and midweek soccer. What's up, Doyle?
I am happy to be back in the saddle. I do miss Madrid. I think, if the right sort of transfer offer came through, I would ask Anders to consider it, and I would like to test myself in Europe.
I can't take another transfer, Doyle. I stop joking around about this. I can't do it. So now look, Madrid is nice. All your descriptions were wonderful. The food, the culture, the fill in the blank. It's not Paris. And look, Marko Mitrovic will be with us on Thursday to talk about the U.S. Men's Olympic team. So that's a tease. Plus, I was in Paris of the planes.
Yeah, I knew that was the direction you were going when you said it's not Paris. I was like, oh, this is a Kansas City bit, isn't it?
It's a dad joke, too. So, it's really hitting me in the feels here. Before we get into things, this is a fun show to just plan out, let alone do. I have an idea. I have a feeling. I have just sort of a little bit of momentum that's been building. I want to see if you would agree with me, or you think I'm coming out of left field and just being a homer. To me, Doyle, I think we might be living one of, if not the best MLS seasons of all time.
I think just
week to week, messy, the level of excellence at the top of the Shield race, the ambition, the way this summer actually feels like a time when teams will, can, and do make formational change to their teams. Like, I think we're living some greatness here.
I agree. I think that 2018 is still the standard because we had the all-time best Supporter Shield run between two all-time great teams that really wanted it. Well, we might have something better than that by the end of the season. We're not there yet, but I think it could end up being that way. The thing that 2018 also had was a lot of breakout young players. Alfonso Davies being the big one. Tyler Adams was another. Yanhel Herrera, another one. I don't think we're quite hitting that level. Diego Luna would probably be the best
Andres
example.
Andres Gomez, given his numbers and the success of RSL, I think you'd have to at least throw him into that mix as well. Gabriel Peck probably counts.
Maybe Mateus Bogus, the other side of LA.
So George Mihailovic, how young is he? I'll leave that up to you.
He's 26 now. Yeah.
Okay, fine. Yeah. That's over.
but it doesn't feel like quite the same level. The flip side, more players, it feels like, are having great seasons than what 2018 produced. 2018 was more about Atlanta, the Red Bulls, and to a lesser extent, NYCFC. This is, I think, more diffuse with the amount of players having like Chicho Arango being one, Cucho Hernandez being another. Like it's happening everywhere.
Let's do that. Let's do that exercise, because as you were saying that, it's one of my notes of like, look at all the credible MVP contenders. And that's what happens when you have six teams credibly in the Shield race. Like, you have great teams, great players, and these, these massive campaigns that are fueling them. But it seems to me it's at an outsized level. I mean, Lucho, Arango, Bawanga probably gets in there.
Yep.
He has to. Messi, Suarez, Cucho. If you're Phil Neville, Evander, there's a bunch of guys that jump up into. Christian Benteke probably in there. Georgi Mihailovic, if you want to stretch it a little bit for a Rapids team that is overperforming.
I mean, that's the thing. Like Georgi is absolutely not in the MVP race this year. He's not. He also has 10 goals and 9 assists and is on track for like a 15-13 type of season, which 10 years ago is MVP caliber production. So we're having like what you have to do now to be in the MVP race in terms of week-to-week productivity is higher than it's ever been. And there are more players hitting those numbers than at any time in past seasons. And part of that is I think teams are just absolutely committed to collecting as many points as possible. There's no, your foot stays on the gas the entire year. And the biggest, you know, part of that is getting your best players out onto the field as much as possible in a way that doesn't overtax them and cause them to break down. So you're seeing more roster management. You're seeing more tactical innovation from coaches. I mean, look at what Pat Noonan has done over the past month.
Some of that management is not by choice, right? It's not like Pat Noonan is saying, oh boy, how do I maximize my center back core for the next 3 weeks? Like he is, and just as Tata has been, sort of in this, I don't know, this like desperation scenario of just sort of plugging the dike of like, oh, stick a finger in there. Oh God, we lost another guy for the season. Oh, you know, that came unexpectedly, and they're still holding the level.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it so impressive. But Pat Noonan was talking last week, and he said something that just like really struck me, and it's obvious and it should be obvious, but just sort of like, hey, we understand the price of every point essentially for the rest of the way. And yes, it's the shield, but it's also seeding in the playoffs. It's all these different things coming together. It's CONCACAF Champions Cup spots, and all of a sudden there are more teams that have that sort of like underlying ambition of this is what we can be in this tournament. We could potentially win it. And so every decision, every moment, every shot, every goal, every referee decision, every review, everything to me right now, just it feels heightened just because I know and I can put my fingers on and I can imagine what the stakes are. Because at the end of the year, you're not going to win the shield by 10 points. You're not going to win the shield by 5 points. It's probably going to be a couple points. It might be a single result. You're seeding in the playoffs, where you go two times or who you host two times or who you host in an all like a knockout round game. That's all in up for grabs. And that's just at the top. I mean, the middles are I mean, it's just, I've called it a cavalcade of mediocrity, I think, on this show. And that's not quite accurate, but it's teams that are fighting their way out of that. And it's going to be a matter of points too. It just feels like a great year.
It does. It does. Right. And I'm excited to be back in it.
Let's do it. Best thing we saw. Match day 26. Take it away.
The best teams in MLS over the past couple of months going head-to-head and what Columbus did to LAFC. I honestly think it's one of the great regular season performances in MLS history. Full stop. It's up there with like the Red Wedding, Atlanta Snow game in Minnesota, Seattle's decision day win over the Galaxy 10 years ago. Like this is it was a landmark performance from what I think is becoming one of the all-time great teams in MLS history in Wilfred Nancy's Columbus Crew. I will 10 years from now on this show, hopefully you and I will still be talking about this game as like, oh yeah, if you want to be taken seriously, you got to do something like that. My God, this Columbus Crew team. My God.
I think we're seeing something here that we haven't seen before. And I say that in terms of like the style of play married with the results, with everything that goes around this Crew team right now, the level of talent, and of course the coaching. But I'm only even thinking like very granularly in the sense of we didn't see Wilfred Nancy get a second year after the epic season in Montreal.
Well, to be fair, the epic season was his second year, but he was starting from a lower baseline.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I'm just saying like, hey, this baseline of excellence, we've set a baseline. Okay, here we go. I mean, so I guess we have seen it. Like if the first year in Montreal was the first year in Columbus and he won cup in that first year, and then the second year he's like, oh, okay, now I have these guys longer. I can make them understand where we're going better and we can recruit more. Oh, this is what you get. The level of detail, the way that they bullied LAFC in a game in which at home in LA, I mean, Steve Cherundolo's team usually is the one doing the bullying.
Steve Cherundolo said afterwards, we've never lost like this at home ever. And he is correct. Like that was that, like they just got stomped into just like a bloody corpse by the end of the game. It was memorable.
Anyway, We'll get to both those teams and break it all down. I don't want to waste all our good material off the top. I do, however, before we get into the Shield race, want to shout out Charlotte, because the best thing I saw was Dean Smith's boys going to Cincinnati and look, surviving some moments, but also just making the plays that it takes to beat the Shield leader on their own turf. That's definitely not something that last year Charlotte would have done, or expansion Charlotte would have done. The progress that they've made, Doyle, in a really short period of time, it's awesome. And it should be aspirational for a lot of clubs out there in Major League Soccer. I mean, think back to last year. I mean, this was a playoff team, but, you know, we've talked about it kind of in name only, just like, hey, congratulations and you're out. They had underperforming DPs. There was a coaching carousel ongoing. They were crazy open. They were vulnerable with the ball. Like, how many leads did they give up? How many moments were they the ones consistently coming out on the wrong side of it? And look, they had great fans, and it turns out some underlying talent that was really, really good. And now, I mean, they could get fourth this year. They could have home field advantage in that first round of the playoffs. Their floor is super high, and their ceiling could be higher. I mean, we've got to think of them in a different light, I think, depending on how the summer goes. I mean, Dean Smith was a great hire. They have unity. The message is very clear. Ashley Westwood has said this. Like, the way that he brought us all on board was super important. And then you have Westwood, Uronen, Byrne, Kalina all performing. Their young core. Let me just list this off. I want your reaction, because I hadn't really considered this, like, in mass. Milanda, who just signed an extension. Privet, Vargas, Ajiman, Yuri Tavares, I would throw in that as a young player. He just turned 23. Ben Bender, Pekovic's a U22. He's a Serbian youth international. Jalen Lindsay, João Pedro is a center back from Brazil who was the MLS X Pro Best 11 last year. And then Bertramus on the back end at 16, right? Or is he 17 now?
16.
And that's low-key kind of crazy as far as a young core goes.
It's good. They don't have a pure chance creator.
Okay, and but they can sign one.
Yeah, well, that is the question. Can they sign one this summer? They have the open DP slot. I think they have more clarity in both how they play and the types of players they want in certain roles under Dean Smith. In the past, this front office has been imprecise in the types of DPs they signed and in thinking about how those players would fit with the group that was already on the roster. And I don't trust them yet. I trust what I've seen from Dean Smith. I trust the hell out of Privet and Milanda and Kalina behind them. I don't trust the front office to make the right signings. And so, as impressed as I am, right, and they're sixth in the East, and they are sixth on expected goal differential in the East, and I think they're sixth in American Soccer Analysis. They have the goals added metric. They're sixth in the East on that as well. So they're right where they should be.
No, rare and triple crown for Charlotte.
Right? And they have the opportunity to climb if they make the right signing. But in the brief history of Charlotte FC, that is a massive if.
I completely get your concern there. You know, it's like you got that scar tissue in you. I feel it. Copetti was a bad one. Swiderski was a good one that was on bad teams, I would argue. Ujwiak was not a DP. I mean, just like in generally, if we're going to define this thing in name only, I guess. But think about Leo Labada. Let's just start there as a recruitment perspective. Okay, they got that one right. Who was involved with that? Dean Smith is here as well. I think that combination of Dean Smith having clarity as to what he wants, what he thinks his team needs, and influence to help bring it that way, I mean, hopefully we'll get the job done. I would sign a 10. That's just me. It sounds like they want to sign a 9. Okay, what does that mean for Karol Swiderski? Do you have to move him now? Do you introduce him back into a team that's completely different than the one he left and hope that he improves his value for a winter sale? I don't know. Tim Ream is probably going to come, Doyle. Little leadership, little composure on the ball in the back line, depth. Calling everyone in MLS who needs a center back. Bill Tuiloma is probably a decent guy to call about right now. Just saying. I'm just saying I think Charlotte has put themselves in a position, if they can take advantage, to truly be a team that could make some noise in the playoffs.
I don't disagree with that. I'm keeping my powder dry on that take until I see them make the right signing, because okay. I don't think, like, Leo Labat is a nice player. He's goal dangerous, which they clearly want from their wingers. He's in the 21st percentile among wingers in terms of expected assists. He's not a chance creator.
I get it. We want the, but Doyle, we want the 10. Everybody wants the 10. Go sign the 10. But they just went to Cincinnati and won 3-1. Like, did that performance alone not tell you something about what they can be?
It told me about what they are right now. Right, they're super defensively sound, really opportunistic when teams make mistakes. Kalina is a match winner. I wrote in my column, I thought the single biggest play of the weekend was Kalina saving that PK against Lucho.
Milanda told him where to go. Did you hear that story?
I did. Yeah, I did. I like all of it. They need one more high-end attacking piece, a creator, in order to take a step into the next group. And until I see them bring that piece in, look, you could win games like that against Cincinnati. You know, they beat Columbus earlier in the year, though that was a kind of a, like, Columbus were in the middle of the CONCACAF Champions Cup run, and I think they were missing some players as well. But they have some good wins. Nobody would be picking them in a playoff battle against either of those teams or Miami or probably the New York teams.
Look at this chase for excellence, Doyle. Like I told you, best season of all time.
That's what I'm saying,
Charlotte,
right?
It's not good
if they want to be anything more than a footnote, then they have to make the types of signings that can put them into that class.
Okay, fair enough. But well, I'll say for the Charlotte supporters out there, anybody watching, they may not be in that top six, which we're going to break down in just a second. But look how they've used MLS Next Pro. They did just lose their head coach from that, so we'll see how that continues. But a ton of talent coming out of there. Look how they've drafted. Look at that young core. I think this team is going places. All right, let's keep it moving. Chaotic neutral is the phrase for the Shield race this weekend. Let's just lay it out for folks. Entering Saturday night, Cincinnati were first on 48 points. Miami were behind them on 47. Then it was a pack in the West on 43. LAFC, RSL, LA Galaxy, and Columbus with a ton of games in hand. In the conversation, we're back on 39 points, a full 9 points back of the leaders in Ohio. So Inter Miami are watching from home. They're not playing. Nothing at stake for Miami other than hoping the gap doesn't increase to 4 points because Cincinnati have a home game against Charlotte. We had an MLS Cup rematch to add some spice into this one, of course. In LA, LAFC, Crew, Chirundolo, also in the middle of some conversations, let's say, about that U.S. men's national team job, plus then road games for RSL and LA Galaxy. So Cincinnati lose, Doyle, off the bat. Massive momentum changes. Charlotte go up 2-0. Back comes Cincinnati. Lucho misses a penalty. There's a goal right afterwards. It's offside in the buildup for Cincinnati, and they lose 3-1. So Miami deeps a big sigh of relief there. Galaxy lay an egg in Dallas. MLS Cup rematch. LAFC get worked by the Crew. They make their statement with a game in hand and climb up to 42 points. And here's where we stand. Cincinnati, Miami, LAFC, Salt Lake, LA, Columbus. But the Crew, Miami, and Cincinnati, now the only teams with 2 points per game or more. Let's break this down into two groups. We have our core four, Cincinnati, Miami, LAFC, and Columbus, and the two dark horses, that's going to be RSL and LA. Big Wednesday games coming up in all this. Cincinnati is going to host Chicago, Columbus hosting Charlotte, LA Galaxy hosting Colorado, and LAFC hosting Salt Lake. So some home games. You can watch that LAFC-RSL one for free on MLS Season Pass. Why are RSL and Galaxy a step down, Doyle? Let's start with that question.
I think the Galaxy has more to do with their defense than anything else. If you were to list out these top six teams, as we just did, the Galaxy, they strike me as the one most likely to shoot themselves in the foot with defensive errors or like individual defensive errors or like just poor shape in possession that then allows a counterattack in the other direction. And then on top of that, we saw this past weekend in Dallas when they played without Dejan Jovetic and they stunk. I mean, they generated less than like 0.4 expected goal And they've had a number of performances like that this year, and they've almost all come without Jovalich. So they need to, I think, look, Miguel Berrios had some moments. He hasn't taken his opportunity to solidify his role as the backup number nine. They need to add a piece. And because I think the drop off is just too severe, and I'm not sure how much flexibility they have to do it. So that's LA. Salt Lake, you know, RSL, really good. By the numbers, I think they're pretty clearly the second best team in the Western Conference. And I think they have a pretty easy schedule the rest of the year. So they absolutely could make a run. And I might be writing them off a little too soon. But it's kind of the same thing with LA, where it's like, I don't quite buy their defense in terms of the ability to strangle out a top attack in the way that I do the other, you know, the core four teams in our shield race. And I think we saw some of that against Portland this past weekend. Like, the Timbers made RSL scramble. They made them play, really, like, get behind the play and spend entire sequences just trying to catch up and put out a fire in a way that I don't think we've seen anybody do to them this year. And part of this is, like, Portland's been playing really well, and they have four attacking pieces who all fit together and whose strengths sort of amplify each other. Losing to Portland is no, there's no shame in it. But the way it happened for RSL, the way they got gappy, the way they got behind the play, that filled me with a little bit of concern. And you know, they're on 43 points with LAFC, but they are, you know, behind because they're on 1.87 points per game. LAFC is on 1.95. And now RSL have lost 2 of 4. And my goodness, is Wednesday's game big?
It's massive. On the RSL side, I agree with you. I think it's, as I look at them, it's, boy, Anelli and Ojeda have just played out of their minds.
Yeah.
And there was probably coming a time where that form would dip a little bit. And the injuries they have with, you know, with Ruiz and others, it means that those guys either need to be in or you're going to have a drop off. And then the injuries are clear on the back line. Like, we haven't talked about this enough. Their center back situation is sort of dire.
Yeah.
Like, there has been a real scramble and sort of patchwork approach by Pablo and his staff and those players. And they've done really well with it. But when you're playing fullbacks in the middle, there will come some times where you have some defensively frail moments. And look, they're still relying on Luna for a lot of that chance creation, unless Arango drops in or Gomez is just roasting people and wasn't a marquee game for any of them. And when that happens on the road against a good Portland side, you're not going to win. Now, for the Galaxy, I think they're going to try to get that 9. Vanny says they're working on it. Will Kuhn says has figured out a way to get all these other things done for them. I completely agree that they need that. I think there's also a little bit of a red flag here with Ricky coming back. They've lost twice in 3. I know one was the LAFC, but in both these losses, LAFC and Dallas, the other team just said, you can have the ball. Like, are trying to eliminate those transition moments that Peck and Paintsil have been so effective in. And in particular, that's smart to do in this game because Paintsil starts up top. They didn't even start Barry. And just saying, actually, we think we can deal with you if you're in front of us. And that's been one of the complaints about Ricky, is that sometimes the pace of the game gets slowed down too much. Like, what they need from Ricky is for him to speed the game up at the right times and keep the ball moving. And I felt like in this game against Dallas and also against LAFC, and they just didn't have the right pace. And I heard Greg Vanney say we were off the pace. And I didn't take that to mean the speed of the game. I took that to mean from him the pace that he wants to play in critical moments, because so much of the way he likes to play is, yeah, we're going to have the ball, but we need to know when to speed you up. And I just didn't feel like the Galaxy sped Dallas up at all.
I completely agree with that. And I think that is really well put. And I think that speaks to, well, first of all, the absence of Jovalich, right? Because his movement opens up spaces for Peck and Paintsil to attack, opens up passing lanes for Ricky and whoever else they happen to have in deep central midfield. And I want to give Greg Vanney credit and Wilkins credit for that, because they have created a nice depth chart in central midfield, and everything about Vanney, well, not everything, but most of Vanney's game plan comes from being able to dominate the ball in central midfield. That said, when I look at the Galaxy, I'm still not entirely sure what their best roster and game plan synthesis is against the other top teams, right? Like if I look at Columbus, if I look at LAFC, and I know it's kind of awful to say this after LAFC just got destroyed, if I look at Miami, I know how they want to play and how the pieces fit in the biggest games against the best teams. With the Galaxy, I don't have that belief in them yet. And I think I honestly feel the same way, maybe to a lesser extent, about RSL. And the other thing to understand here is the first 20 years of the league, from 1996 to 2016, I think only two teams were better than 2 points per game. Maybe three. It was 98 Galaxy, 2001 Miami Fusion, and 2005 San Jose Earthquakes. Only three teams in 20 years. Since 2017, you had the Galaxy, Toronto FC won the treble. They were over 2 points per game. 2018, Atlanta and the Red Bulls both went over 2 points per game. 2019, LAFC over 2 points per game. 2020, Philly over 2 points per game. 2021, the Revs set the single season points record over 2 points per game. 2022, both LAFC and Philly finished on 67 points. So 2022, both those teams were under just under 2 points per game. 2023, last year, Cincinnati back over 2 points per game, winning the Shield. It is like now at this point over in the TAM era, you have to be at or over 2 points per game in order to really be a Shield contender. The Galaxy are at 1.8 points per game, and RSL are at 1.9 points per game. So in recent MLS vintage, they are not, at this point, performing at a Shield level pace. Of the two, I would say RSL has a better chance of getting there for the rest of the season because that schedule is relatively easy, and because they have said they're going to go out and get a new DP, probably a DP number 10. If they get that signing right, and they get Justin Glad healthy again, they could make a run. But we're talking about them in a different way than we're going to talk about the core four teams, because it's if. Whereas the core four teams, it's like, here's what they are, and here's why they can do it.
Completely agree. The summer can change things. As you said, look, RSL, my understanding is they'll go get that DP10, or that's the plan. It will not be a record signing. It won't be like, oh, hey, Chicho Arango is now the number two most expensive player in our club's history. Yeah, but it will be a sizable investment, somebody they think can impact the team right now. They've got a big game coming up against LAFC, do RSL, and they won't have Andres Gomez. He got a yellow card at the weekend. That means he is suspended. Meanwhile, the Galaxy, they don't win much in Dallas anyway. Like, you know, that was one thing that, you know, say, hey, you have to go there and win, and that's the expectation for a Shield winner, certainly. But, like, LA also hadn't played in these conditions so far this year. Hot, humid, swampy, soupy, whatever you want to call it in Dallas. There's a reason why they have a home field advantage there and in Texas in general. And they wilted. So they got another opportunity. They're hosting Colorado at 10:30 p.m. Eastern time on Wednesday night. RSL will be in L.A. Massive situation. Let's see.
I'm going to put a number on it. I'm going to say the Galaxy are like less than 5% chance to win the Supporters Shield. And I'll put...
I think I might go even smaller. I think I might go like, if we're talking true probabilities, and this is not me hating on the Galaxy at all, like the Shrine will not be affected by this statement. I think you got to put them in like the 1-2% zone. Like it's extremely unlikely.
Yeah. I think I'd buy that. Unlikely.
What about RSL? And let's calculate our percentages over time. So let's say we've got 1% accounted for right here. How about?
Okay. Let's make it 2%.
All right. Just, here you go, Galaxy. You get an extra percentage.
I'm gonna say like 8% for RSL, because I think if you play this season out, the rest of the season from here on out, if you play it out, you know, 50 times, do they win four of them? Well, yeah, four. Like they make the right signing, they get the right guys healthy. Diego Luna goes up a level in terms of his ability to eliminate guys off the dribble. It all sort of happens at once and coalesces. So I'm going to say 8% for RSL.
I love your enthusiasm. I love RSL and everything Pablo's done. 8% is astronomically high. Just think in this terms, like the next two games before Leagues Cup, they just got worked in Portland. This was a massive week. It's at Portland, then it's at LAFC, then it's at Colorado on the 21st, heading into the MLS All-Star game and then Leagues Cup. So like what they do at LAFC and at Colorado, that's basically their season in terms of the Shield.
Yep.
I know it's home heavy the rest of the way. San Jose, New England, Dallas, Portland, Minnesota, and Vancouver all at home. And their away games are at Houston, not easy, and at Austin and at San Jose, two relatively more easy in terms of strength of schedule ones. I just think 8% is high. Can I compromise with you and get you down to 4%? Because I think 5%. Let me give you 5. How you feel?
I'll take 5.
All right.
I'll take 5.
2% and 5%. Let's get to the core 4. Let's get to the teams we really think are going to eat up our percentages here and the probability. Let's start with LAFC. That's who we decided was the fourth most likely to win the Supporters Shield in the pre-show meeting. Why fourth? Why will they win? And I guess in this case, why will they not?
Yeah, I keep going back and thinking like maybe we're overreacting to them getting absolutely stuffed in a locker by Columbus. But a loss like that is tough to ignore. And that, I mean, that's the why will they not? LAFC at their best. Do I think they could match Columbus or Miami? I don't necessarily think so. And even when they add Olivier Giroud, I'm not sure that's going to be the case. I'm not sure that they're going to be able to go out there and impose themselves upon the game, turn it into an LAFC type of game in the way that Columbus this weekend went to LAFC's house and turned it into a Columbus Crew game. I just don't think their ultimate level is as high as those two teams. Maybe Giroud changes that. Maybe he does. And plus, you get Kiki Oliveira back after the Copa America.
Yeah, some positional flex with Bogusz to come into the midfield, and Eric Duenas had to start this weekend, and he's a good young player. But with Tillman out suspended, I mean, that's a hard guy to lose in this particular matchup against the Crew.
On top of it, they have the U.S. Open Cup. And that adds a little bit of schedule congestion late in the year when they're trying to, you know, everybody else is getting off weeks.
They also did the Houston Hurricane game or whatever, you know, moved right down as well. So that's going to complicate things. To me, one of the biggest things is they got a lot of road games and they're not particularly great on the road. Like they're middle of the pack in MLS away from LA. And that was why this game was so huge, is because they hadn't lost at home this year, Doyle. They were 9-0-2. They had won like 28 of their last 30 points. Only two teams had come in at 11 and just even taken a point off LAFC at home. They're the best home team in the league pretty clearly right now. And they took a big fat L.
So that's the argument for why they won't. The argument for why they will is that they're about to add a center forward who over the past 15 years at the highest levels of the game has made a living not just scoring goals, but making everybody around him better. And this is an attack that is already blindingly good with Bogusz and obviously Bawanga and Oliveira, who has, you know, he's finally figured out how to put the ball in the net right before he left for Copa America. And then guys like Tillman and Eddie Atuesta, and of course those attacking fullbacks, you know, Ryan Hollingshead, we know, is one of the great attacking fullbacks in MLS history. So they have a piece coming in who can make everyone on this already excellent team 15% better. And maybe then that makes me wrong about my lack of confidence in LAFC's ability to impose their game on whoever they're playing. And if that's the case, I think with the West being maybe a little softer at the bottom than the Eastern Conference, maybe that sort of clears the path for LAFC to not quite run the table, but do something close to it on the back half or the final third of the season.
And that's what it feels like it's going to take. You know, it just feels like it's going to take again. And that's why this is so exciting. Just that level of sustained excellence. And when Wilfred Nancy told me on this show, hey, I value the Shield more. I mean, that's why I understood what he was saying. That's why I've always understood your argument. It's like, there's nothing better. There's nothing more difficult than dealing with all these conditions throughout the year. And Giroux's going to change their conditions. I mean, look, Kiki Oliveira has been incredibly impressive in terms of the eye test, but unimpressive in terms of final product. Maybe that changes. Coming off of Copa America where you got numbers for, you know, minutes for Uruguay and coming in with Giroux, maybe it does. My understanding is Giroux does not have a date set right now. I'll be in LA on. The working plan is to sort of get him settled in and use the League's Cup period to get him up to speed, and LAFC after that will have a pretty away heavy schedule to finish things out, but one that's not crazy difficult. All right, let's go to number three. FC Cincinnati.
Let me just make a quick point because you said sustained excellence. Coming into this weekend, LAFC had one loss in their previous 15 games. They were unbeaten in 10. So sustained excellence is that's a club in their bag. They have been able to play it this year, and they will be a better team when Giroux arrives. So if they make a crazy run over the final 12 games or 10 games of their season, I don't think anybody would be overly shocked at all. Are we going to put a number on this one, or are we going to are we going to wait until the end to do?
No,
all
I think
four
we
got.
I think we've got to be. You know, we got to plan it out because obviously you've got to save more than 50% for your number one team. Or I guess you don't with on probability.
Yeah.
What am I talking about? Math has obviously never been our strong suits here. let's say I think you could go into probably the 20s for this team. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's actually 20% was the number that I had in my head.
It sounds good to me. Nice and even. LFC, 20% chance, 1 in 5 for you based on this very rigorous model that we're cooking up live with a very rudimentary understanding.
I can hear all the ASA guys like screaming
just groaning
at us.
All right, number three, FC Cincinnati. Boy, it was a disaster in every way for them at home against Charlotte. I mean, the obvious is that you dropped 3 points, but actually their record on the road has been much better this year, has Cincinnati's. Also, the disaster is Lucho misses a penalty that could change the game. I guess the flip side is Christian Kolina saves a penalty that changes the game for Charlotte. Then it's a matter of inches on the Yamil Assad offside that keeps that Orejano goal out. You know, Kubo couldn't play up top because he's playing in the middle for Wobodo, who was suspended. And then to make matters even more worse, with Chicago coming up midweek, with Miles Robinson sticking around for that match and not going to the Olympics, Miles Robinson gets a red card. He will have to stick around now for that match because in MLS competition rules, basically they don't want you to try to manipulate suspensions before international dates when you're not available anyway. So like if you were on 4 yellow cards and you went and got your 5th yellow card to get suspended for the next game, but you knew you'd be away from international, that wouldn't count as that suspended game. You'd have to wait till you're actually available. So he'll have to stick around and he won't be available either for the Olympics team or for Cincinnati in a massive Shield game. So yes, disaster, but we still have them number 3, Doyle. Why is that? Why will they win? Why won't they?
I think we made a mistake in having them number 3. I think they should be number 4. But looking at this remaining schedule, it's tough. They like their next two games, Chicago at home on Wednesday, and then their last game before the League's Cup is at the Red Bulls. The Red Bulls aren't playing great right now, but they're a good team. They're hard to beat. Then they come out of the League's Cup, they're at Miami, then they host Montreal, then they host Columbus, then they're at Minnesota, who's going to be desperate. They're at Nashville, who hopefully will have reinforced their roster to give BJ Callahan a chance to work. They host LAFC, and as we mentioned, they're not great at home. They're at NYCFC. NYCFC is great at home. Then they're home against Orlando City, and they finish up away at the Union. There are very few easy games in there. There are a number of wood chippers, and the simple fact is that this team lost the defender of the year for the season. And I know they've been holding it together really well in Matt Biazga's absence, and I know that they probably have the ability to go out and add a big piece because it seems like they're going to part ways with Aaron Bupenza as quickly as possible. that would give them a DP slot to use maybe along the back line. So it's like they have a chance to look very different. And just as I think LAFC's loss to Columbus was something of an aberration, so was Cincinnati's loss to Charlotte, right? Like they're a better team than they showed on the weekend, but they're still a team that, because of injuries and because of underperformance from Bupenza and Corey Baird, they just have a few more questions about honestly about who they are and what their best group looks like and how they play together than I think either Columbus or Miami do.
Can I just, as you're saying that, I'm thinking about this group and what they do going forward. With Orochano playing so well in that sort of dual 10 role with Lucho, do you think there could be a world where instead of playing two forwards and then the 10 underneath and letting Lucho be completely free basically and go where he wants, you play with 1-9, you get rid of Bupenza, you sign a 9 that fits in that system in a different way? I mean, look, they've shown an ability to find outside backs that work. Like, I think Yedlin on the right just locked that down. Orochano was always a sort of forced fit on the left. That really wasn't his natural position. He did it for the team, and he did it very well, but clearly he's much more goal dangerous on the right. Like, do you think they could reshuffle the way they think about this team?
I mean, we've already seen it. Pat Noonan had this team starting in the 3-4-2-1, and yeah, the first 25...
But he kind of had to, right? Like, he kind of had to. The plan would have been Bupenza plays one of those spots, and you probably have another guy like Corey Baird up there, or Kevin Kelsey, obviously, with him. Like, it seems to me like the roster is built, and the idea was Lucho underneath and two forwards.
Right. And I do think that is still their best look. My question is, can they play Orochano as a sort of inverted wingback in a 3-4-1-2 in the way that Bernardeschi has played that role for Toronto this year at a really high level, by the way? Bernardeschi's been excellent.
What do you do with Yedlin? He's one of your center backs because you need to get through this period?
If you have Orochano as an inverted right wingback, he's going to play higher than a normal wingback, and there's going to be more space for the right center back to cover, not just in the channel, but out into the flank. You need a veteran with pace. And that is DeAndre Yedlin. I like that as a look. I thought we saw a little bit of that in the second half, and I think we saw it in a previous game. And Yedlin was pretty good in that situation. It does force him probably to defend in the box more when they don't have the ball, and that's never been his strong suit. But it's something that Pat Noonan's been willing to throw out all kinds of looks this year, and most of them have worked. They're at the top of the Supporter Shield rankings. This is one that I would like to see more of, because I still think Lucho is at his best when he has two forwards giving him multiple options in front of him. And if I have to compromise on Orochano at his best versus Lucho at his best, I'm going to compromise on Orochano.
And I think it also just makes sense with the personnel situation right now. Also, Yamil Assad, credit to him, has been playing real well.
Real well.
Left wing back. It's like, it's one of those great MLS sicko moments where you're like, oh, it's Yamil Assad's, it's his music. He's back, baby. For who? Doing what? Okay, I believe it. Why not? Credit to Pat Noonan, to your point, man. He has really patched this thing together with duct tape, specifically in recent times, but also to start the season, just integrating so many new parts. On the flip side, credit to Albright and everybody involved, and obviously Noonan as well, for going and getting guys who you could just insert immediately and kind of rely upon. I mean, you think of, you know, Miles Robinson, for instance, and Yedlin, et cetera. That has made things much easier for all these other players. Okay. They host Chicago midweek. That's an absolute must win, right? They want to keep pace here?
Yeah. We don't know Lucha's status for that one, because he came off with a knock at the very end.
Had an x-ray, by the way.
Did he? Have we seen anything on
negative?
Negative. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
Hopefully he's okay to go. It's an absolute. For Shield purposes, this is an absolute must win for FC Cincinnati. You cannot drop points at home to Chicago.
Okay, let me ask you one final question. You move Bupenza. who do you try to go get at center back? Because you need, if you're going to win the Shield, you're going to make this run. Regardless, Miazga is not coming back this season. What sort of solution do you try to go for at center back?
Can you give Matt Tummels a six-month DP contract and then say, okay, but in 2025, you're gonna take $1.6 million.
So you're sticking with Kelce, basically. It's like Kelce or Kubo, who's their best forward right now, by the way.
Yep. Yeah.
Baird as your nine options.
Right, and then they have the kid who the homegrown kid who they've been playing up top a little bit as well, and they have Sergio Santos. So it's not like they're hurting for bodies. I have questions about whether or not any of those guys is a match winner in the playoffs. I don't have questions about Lucho being a match winner or Orzano. I know he hasn't done it yet, but he passes the eye test in so many ways. So I think you can go a little bit lighter in terms of proven commodities up top for the sake of improving that defense, which has lost two starters.
Man, we had James to any number of teams with Moadu on the last show. Now we got Matt Tummels to Cincinnati. It's plausible. It could happen, folks. Okay, on to the next. And that is Inter Miami at number two. Clearly, we're on a Columbus Crew high. Inter Miami, boy, what a weekend for them. They got some rest in their legs, and they watched basically every team around them just sort of come up a little bit short. That was ideal.
It was. And one of their guys happened to win the Copa America, but maybe a Pyrrhic victory for Inter Miami, given the way Leo Messi's ankle looked. To me, that looked like a bad sprain. Hopefully,
I've seen that on both ankles like three times. I'm not saying that Messi and I are the same. I'm saying that grade three ankle sprains.
Oh, you're not saying that. You're not saying that you and Messi are the same.
No, I'm just saying that.
Our listeners.
Yeah, I know a little something about grade three ankle sprains over the year, and that was I'm not saying it is. I'm not diagnosing it, but that level of swelling, he's not going to be back in the next couple weeks, you would think. It feels like League's Cup and a chase of that defense is likely to come without Messi. I mean, if you're Miami, you can't risk this dude.
I'm gonna pause. We didn't put a number on Cincinnati.
Is it at 20? I'll let you go under 20 if you want.
Yeah, I think it's 15%.
I'll do it. It kills me because I'm sticking by my selection of Cincinnati from weeks ago. Can't jump off that bandwagon. All right, 15-20, 5-2. So that puts us up to 42% claimed so far in our percentages with two teams left. Miami without Messi, how much of a concern is that for the Shield? Or do you think he'll be back in time to make that stretch run?
I think he'll be back in time for the stretch run. And even so, it's not actually that concerning given what this team has been able to do over the past 6 weeks without Messi, Suarez, or Matty Rojas. Like, they have figured out a way to put together an attack that is consistent in the terms of their chance creation. Super dangerous on set pieces. Like, they've won games outright just on dominating off of restarts. Julian Gressel has been incredible for them. They've proved to have depth in midfield, up top, and at fullbacks. Both fullbacks. Drake Callender hasn't been great, but we've seen him go on a heater and be a match winner for months at a time. There are a lot of reasons to think that even if Messi has to miss the next 8 weeks, Miami are still going to be right there. I said at the start of the year, I've said it a million times, they are the deepest team I've ever seen in MLS. And a lot of that credit has to go to Chris Henderson, who has mastered the salary cap. I think a lot of that credit has to go to Messi for getting guys like Suarez and Jordi Alba to come here as non-DP players. And, you know, friends of Messi it has its benefits for the team that signs Messi. But then a lot of the credit has to go to Tata Martino for playing guys like David Ruiz and obviously Benha Kramovsky, who's now gone on Olympic duty.
I mean, Ian Frey, Yannick Bright.
Yes.
Keep going down the list.
Ian Frey missed most of the past year.
He's missed like the last 4 years. He's missed like the last 4 years with that same injury.
and he is immediately inserted into the starting lineup and has played really well, I thought, relative to what we all could have expected from a young kid who has had so many awful injuries throughout his career. Yannick Bright and Leo Afonso, getting players like that out of the super draft, and Tata being willing to, it reminds me of what he did with Julian Gressel 7 years ago in Atlanta, where he just came straight from the Big East and into the starting lineup for one of the best teams in the league. So they have the ability to create goals in different ways that makes it look, obviously you would want Messi in the lineup if under any circumstances, but they can survive that. The defense is a problem.
Yeah, I think I was going to say Cincinnati gave you six reasons why this team, maybe it's the shield that they win, because, you know, somebody was saying this weekend, Man City didn't beat all the best teams in the EPL. They still won the championship and they have a pretty soft schedule. It's home against Toronto and Chicago here before League's Cup break and a long rest that I'm sure they could use as well. But like, other than, I mean, who's the, they, I don't know that I trust the back line or their ability to stop teams in transition or to limit space against the best teams in the league.
Yep.
I just don't know if I do it. Like, it's Christophe, Aviles. I'm not sure I completely trust both or the combination of the two. The Freire injury was just absolutely massive for them. They've got all the talent in the world, basically everywhere else.
The question I have is, are they going to be able to get a proven high-level European center back to take some sort of Friends of Messi pay cut?
Seems like Rafa Varane went to Como,
which is too bad. I mean, it's nice for him. Como is a lovely place, but Varane would have been instantly the best center back in MLS by a mile. He was awesome. But there are more guys like that out there. I think if they get one of those guys, then this team jumps Columbus and becomes the favorites. But I think because of that weakness, because of the ability to just sort of let go of the rope defensively, and it's not without the ball, though they are poor without the ball.
It's with the ball.
It's with the ball.
For like sure.
The ability and distribution of their current center backs is what holds this team back from becoming truly elite. Like 2.5 points per game, set the single season record for points, because they just don't move the ball quickly and precisely into the spots where it would allow Busquets and Messi and Alba to start cooking.
I also just think the moment the ball is lost, anytime they're in a transition moment, anytime they're saying, "Oh, we lost it unexpectedly. What are we doing? Where are the opponent's attacking pieces?" They're already in behind. Like, yeah. There's just too many moments like that where they're at risk when they have the ball, just because they're not ready for that moment of transition. Anything else on Miami? When I assign a number,
do they move Leo Campana this window? If you're the Philadelphia Union and you have the Julian Carranza allocation cash and the open DP slot.
If you're Nashville and you want to play him up top with Surridge out on the left, there's a number of places. Like, I'm going to say no, but I would put this probability wise at like just over 50%. Certainly, no. They'll be getting calls.
Yeah. And they should. And look, Campana has been a really good soldier. He's been a really good player. Suarez is going to start 95% of the games here on out. Start and finish. So it's something do they have confidence in Shander Bjorklund to come back and be a quality backup number nine? If they do, then maybe they move Campana, open a DP slot, open a max roster slot, he's not international, he's American, but still open up some flexibility to then go out and add the type of piece along the back line that would potentially elevate this team. So that is one of the massive ifs among all these teams. I put it at this point, Inter Miami winning the Shield.
58 percentage points to work with here.
Yeah, I'll put it at 27.
27. I'm just going with yours. It's better than us arguing about it. That then puts at 31% the Columbus Crew, the extra time probability model favorites to win the 2024 Supporters Shield. Doyle, man, they just absolutely pummeled that LAFC team. We've already gone over it, but it's not just that game. It's the last 10 games, to be honest with you. Nine of them are wins. The only one that's a loss was that Miami game, and Miami got, what, the two set-piece goals, and it was a little bit fortunate, it felt like, on performance. I thought the Crew were by far the better game, the better team, just didn't finish. So we're that margin away from 10 out of 10. They got games in hand. If they win both their next two matches, they will basically – they'll match where Cincinnati are now, so they'll be right on the current pace. And, look, Cincinnati could drop off that pace a little bit coming up. The two matches for the Crew are going to be Charlotte at home and then at Atlanta. Why can they win this thing? Why are they our favorites on 31%?
Because they've been so good. Because they've already shown that they're going to be able to make a long CONCACAF Champions League, Champions Cup run and not keel over and die in the immediate aftermath. And that's what we're kind of used to. Even from really good teams like LAFC last year, they came out of their run to the final, CONCACAF Champions League, and they were just a much worse team for the next 4 months and became less dimensional, more of a one-trick pony. Columbus have gone in the opposite direction. They came out of that loss to Pachuca really pissed. Like, clearly really upset.
Well, I think, you know, sorry, I'm not gonna make a number one, number two joke there, but
they didn't want to finish number two in that game.
Exactly.
And they have just played better and better and better. And the way they took apart LAFC, like, the first goal was a goal that only the Crew score, in terms of the moving pieces and the way they opened up space for Arston to get into that primary assist zone.
And could do it with another attacking player of quality waiting in the six.
Yeah.
That's the other thing about this team. It's not just it's the collective is, I mean, look, it's everything. Like, the way that they play sets everything else up, but it's the quality too. And because, guys, like, don't necessarily have that attached to their name, like Max Arston. They're like, oh no, he is
legit. That. Yeah. And to your point, yeah, another quality player, because if Christian Ramirez dummies that, if he doesn't, like, if he can't get up and meet that cross, it's Mo Farsi on the back post with one of those patented wing back finishes for Columbus. Second goal is just Cucho being one of the elite players in the game.
It was absurd.
Third goal was what they pressed. I don't even like the floodgates open at this point, but they pressed LAFC in, like, Elie into the types of mistakes that LAFC don't make. They were able to get out in the open field and outrun them. And if you're doing that to LAFC, who've been burying everybody for 3 months, you can do that to anyone. And I think that is Columbus's mindset right now. And then on top of that, because of Wilfred Nancy's philosophy in terms of next man up, player development, they just have more depth than anybody else because they can mix and match pieces. They can always rest whoever they want because they're so good at player development. They sold Aiden Morris for what was it, $5 million?
Yeah, $4 million, whatever.
And they didn't miss a beat. And they have
Sean Zawadzki has been good. Matan has played in there and been good. And Dylan Chambost is coming in.
Yes. Yep.
AZ is just waiting around seeing if maybe he can contribute to this team down the line.
I wish we would see him on Wednesday. Unfortunately, it's one day before the window opens, so we'll have to wait for the weekend to see AZ Jackson, but I think he's going to be awesome for this team.
There's a phrase that Wilfred's been saying a lot of late, and he wants his team to be more disgusting to play against. And in our pre-show in Countdown, Sasha and I both argued, hey, like, LAFC's a better team now than they were last year. The Crew are a better team now than they were last year at the time of MLS Cup. And to me, the biggest change for the Crew is that, like, the individual errors defensively are mostly not entirely gone. The set piece issues are somewhat not entirely gone, but they make more plays. They make more individual plays, and the press has become even more suffocating. They were already very good at getting teams pinned in and then just keeping you there and just pummeling you. But they're especially good now, and the pace with which they are able to, one, attack the ball, but then go to goal repeatedly and collectively, that's the part where it's like they just sort of like suffocated LAFC off the field. And LAFC had every intention of trying to just have the ball a little bit more, of forcing the Crew back and forcing them to defend. I mean, I know that's what they wanted to do. They just couldn't do it. It was like, if it was a test of philosophies, it was just like, hey, you know, like, I don't know, mass religion's going to be, Nazism's going to be here for the next 1,000 years. You know what I mean? Like, it was just sort of like, oh, yep, we're the dominant force. That's us.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
It was, like I said, it was one of the landmark regular season wins in MLS history. One, I think you and I will probably reference as a touch point in the years to come. I think they're the best team in the league. They are the only team in the league conceding less than a goal per game. They just really shut down Dennis Bouanga, which nobody's really been able to do. Like, yeah, he's had games where he hasn't produced, but he's always been dangerous. He wasn't even really dangerous in this game. And they do that while at the same time, their right center back is overlapping or underlapping into the box and being an attacker at times, which just forces the opponents to deal with a different pattern of play than they can possibly prepare for. And they're just smoking teams because of it. That said, it's a tougher schedule the rest of the way. Games in hand are not points.
Well, let me take you through what I think is the critical win or lose moment here. And it's pretty obvious. You got to do it now in order to be there at the end. But there's a specific demarcation line here for Columbus as they get closer to having basically the same number of games played as opponents team at the same time. So before the end here, they're home against Charlotte, at Atlanta, then back from Leagues Cup, it's at Philly, which all of a sudden is the easiest game in the entire league. New York City at home, Seattle at home. Then it's at Cincinnati. And then at that point, they and Cincinnati are one game off instead of being multiple games. They've picked up a couple in hand. So the playing field is a little more even. That's not that hard of a stretch. That's three home games and at Atlanta, at Philly. Neither of those teams are teams that you would think, given what they just did in LAFC, are immune to being run off the field, to be honest with you.
Yeah. I think the Crew are the favorites by a nose over Inter Miami. I wouldn't be shocked if Cincy held on or LAFC made a run, because all four of these teams I think are really historically good. We've only had one season where two teams finished above 2 points per game. That was 2018, which I talked about before. It wouldn't shock me at all if all four of these teams finished above 2 points per game, which is crazy. Thinking about where the league was 10 years ago. I think the Crew are the best of them. 31%.
Let's just chisel it in stone, baby. 31%. Hey, to keep pace, you got to win now. And as we said, that's the beauty. Every moment, every goal, every result has added significance for all these teams. Cincinnati will host Chicago at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. Columbus is going to host Charlotte at 7:30. Galaxy got Colorado in L.A. at 10:30. And then LAFC Real Salt Lake is free on MLS Season Pass at 10:45. It's going to be a great Wednesday. I'm looking forward to it. Let's keep it moving here. Extra time man of the match day. Drum roll, please. Brian White for the brand. Brian White's on fire. He's got 7 goals in his last 5 games. Vancouver went to St. Louis and embarrassed City. That's not my word, although it is also my word. It's John Hackworth's word. It's Chris Durkin's word. It's the word of all those fans who left early. This was a dire performance by St. Louis. But it's a great game for Brian White and the Caps.
I just don't think St. Louis has enough talent. I think the roster build was masked by some unsustainable finishing luck last year and Roman Berkey being insane. And with both those things regressing, this is a better indicator of who St. Louis were. Brian White, in the 9 games before this little hot streak, he was getting between like 3.5 touches in the box per game. He's up over 5 touches in the box per game over the past 5-6 games. And lo and behold, he is scoring more. Structurally, what's changed is that Ryan Gauld is now dropping in and Fafa Picot is pushing up. So it's basically a 3-4-1-2 with Fafa playing as a second forward who runs the lines and Gauld playing as more of a true number 10. It's different than last year. Last year it was a partnership between Gauld and White with Gauld as the second forward and, you know, more of the sort of tempo setting coming out of central midfield. Gauld, when he plays as that 10, plays much more vertically than like Pedro Vite did. It's working. It's awesome. You know, White, because of Fafa's threat through the lines, like that creates some real gravity and that creates space. And what we've seen over his career, Brian White, with space, you know, if there's space to find, he will find it. And if the ball falls at his feet, he will more often than not finish it. It's up to 12 goals on the year.
That's what he does. Just keep scoring. I will say that the Whitecaps looked their best when they had Fafa as one of the, you know, sort of almost wing back winger quasi forwards when they're playing that 3-4-3. Mm-hmm. And then for whatever reason, that wasn't working well for them. The structure wasn't right. Things were moved around. I'd have to go and look harder because there's 29 teams in this league and it's sometimes hard to remember the details, but him being back up in that threesome closer to goal, that's been a good thing for them all season long.
The other thing to note, the schedule has softened a little bit over the past four or five games. So I'm bullish on the Whitecaps because I like their best players. And I actually like their role players too. But I do think we need more data, certainly coming this week and then through Leagues Cup and into August before we can really figure out if... I think it's very likely that the Caps are who their record says they are.
They're not in the top six.
Yep.
Not in points, not in reputation, not in threat in the playoffs. But hey, seen crazy things happen. Let's go grab bag here. I'm going to throw this one at you. Facundo Torres, for one, is now playing his face off. And Oscar Pareja said this: when Facu was omitted from Copa America that week, he made a sudden change knowing he needed to do more that benefited us. And he raised his level. He's putting the team on his shoulders and being a protagonist, and he deserves it. Two more goals, big win against the Revs on the road. But you got Martin Ojeda as a sort of big change in this team.
Yeah, so this little six-game run that Orlando City are on, they're 4-1-1. They've climbed up into the playoff space. I think they're seventh in the Eastern Conference because of this run. The first three games, they were playing a 4-4-2 with the old Y midfield that Bruce Arena used with the Galaxy 10 years ago. Over the past three games, it's been more of a 4-2-3-1 with Martin Ojeda as the number 10. And lo and behold, it's worked really well. Martin Ojeda was primarily a winger in Argentina, but he played some as a number 10. He was in like the 96th percentile of chance creation his final 2 years in Argentina. Like the front office very clearly brought him to MLS to play as a number 10, and for whatever reason Oscar Pareja did not want to do it. He's finally done it over the past three games, or four games I think it is. Ojeda has two goals, two assists, really good underlying numbers, and Facu Torres in that time, who gets to play now as just an attacking right winger and not really a playmaker, has three goals and three assists, and he's getting more touches in the box in better spots. And when he does that, he produces. So it was, to me, once they weren't going to go out this winter and spend money on a high-end number 10, the obvious thing was, they think Ojeda can be that number 10. For whatever reason, it took more than half a season for Oscar Pareja to get there. Now that he's finally there, Orlando City look really good, man. Like, they are not a top six team, right? They're not going to have home field advantage in the playoffs. They're not a team anyone should want to face as long as these guys stay healthy.
I hear you, but those four wins in the last five, Chicago at home, at Toronto, home against DC, at New England without New England's two best players. Loss at Chicago 4-2. So it's getting better. It's getting better, but let's not get too excited down in Orlando. Hey, speaking of, we missed something here, Dwight. I was just on Twitter because my brain is broken. And it sounds like John Hackworth is saying that Sam Adeniran is not in training while they're in discussions with another team. So we could see Sam Adeniran ultimately moving.
So what I had heard was over the winter, they had reached something close to an agreement with a Turkish team to sell Sam and Dennerin for somewhere between $2 to $3 million.
Would have been good business.
It would have. I wonder if that is back on.
Let's see. Seattle, Jordan Morris, both surging. That's good. Jordan Morris gets to play the nine. It wasn't a particularly impressive win, I wouldn't say, in Austin, but it was a 1-0 win thanks to Jordan Morris. I would also shout out Obed Vargas. He has been playing real well.
Awesome. He's 18-year-old
Mexican-American central midfielder who had some issues with his back, I believe, over the years there in Seattle that stunted what had already been insane development on his part. I mean, remember, he was one of the sort of key, we've got to lean on you in the CONCACAF Champions League final, guys. His run to set up that goal, or set up the goal or a free kick, I don't know. He's sick.
Set up the goal.
Yeah, either way, he's sick. What does it mean for Seattle? What does it mean for Jordan Morris and maybe Rui Diaz by extension?
Yeah, so the thing I've been thinking all year is the Seattle front office is probably going to have to buy out Raul Rui Diaz to bring in a younger centerpiece number nine during the summer transfer window. Rui Diaz is a club legend, but he hasn't been good the past year and a half, and he's into the final 6 months of his contract. Well, with Jordan Morris playing like this, as a true number nine, and this is the longest run of games that he's gotten as a true number nine, he's the starter. Can you get Rui Diaz to buy into being a super sub for the final 6 months of his contract and then just like let the contract run down, which saves Seattle's front office some money and then allows them to go out in the winter and spend a DP slot when you have more data on both Morris as a number nine and Pedro de la Vega as an attacking DP, because we saw him start in this one as a number 10, but I think long-term they see him as a left winger and they want Rusnak to be the number 10, which makes sense to me. I like Seattle's priority of sort of dominating midfield with the ball and then allowing the wingers to get in high leverage spots and turn those into chances. De La Vega is supposed to do that. If you can sort of keep your powder dry on that number nine until the winter, that allows you to make some decisions with a lot more data that can guide you.
Seattle rising. That's bad news for those mid-table teams in the West in terms of seeding and potentially down the line, depending on their summer, bad news for the top teams as well. Let's go mid-table in the East. DC, Montreal, Toronto all got big wins. Look, DC still need more match winners, but finally getting the points thanks to Christian Dahomey was a nice respite for them. Montreal, hey, 1-0. Atlanta, things keep getting tougher after that Open Cup elimination. And then for Toronto, that's their first win since May 18th. I just want to congratulate Sean Johnson here. He was the fourth MLS goalkeeper with 150 regular season wins all time. Raimondo Hartman and Steph Fry are the other three. So big congratulations to Sean Johnson. But maybe the biggest news among these three, Bill Manning out in Toronto. Doyle, where do you want to go from these four little points here? Do you want to just say, hey, congratulations for still being in the playoff conversation?
I mean, the Bill Manning thing is the big one, right? Because Toronto were one of the highest spending teams in the league for years. And he was given a lot of rope to build this roster, pretty famously signed Insigne and I think Bernardeschi both off of like transfer market, like doing transfer market research and saying, oh, these guys are out of contract, let's bring them over. And that was his last big swing. If you think about it, Toronto really haven't spent much money since then. And it's now been, what, four coaches since those signings? And Toronto have mostly not been good. And it seems like it was just a decision above him to say, you know, you had your shot and you've had hired four different coaches to try to make this thing work, and it hasn't. I think he paid the price for that. The question now is twofold. Any decisions about the roster, is that on Jason Hernandez now, who was appointed GM last year? I think it should be, but I don't know, because like Hernandez was originally hired by Bill Manning. He's Bill Manning guy. That maybe doesn't bode well long term. So that like the actual who's making the calls for Toronto henceforth is really up in the air. And two is, are they going to spend again? Are they going to, whoever's making these decisions, are they going to look at this roster, this Insigne-Bernardeschi era, and say, yeah, this is worth salvaging. This is worth investing in. Let's try to give John Herdman, who also was hired by Bill Manning, let's try to give John Herdman some more pieces to work with over the course of the season, or maybe it doesn't happen until winter. All of these are known unknowns at this point. What I will say, and it's gone kind of under the radar because Toronto have been bad basically for 3 months. Bernardeschi's been awesome, not just in terms of his chance creation and like productivity, but his willingness to suffer as a two-way player for a guy with that resume and that skill set. Toronto, whatever other decisions are made, Toronto should keep Bernardeschi because he has been that guy.
I mean, if you're choosing between him and Insigne, it's not a choice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, not at all.
No choice at all. All right. Well, that's long term for Toronto. They got some maybe medium, short term even, because the window opens in just 3 days. But in the more present day side of things, Wednesday night, a bunch of big matches on July 17th, just one day before the transfer window opens around Major League Soccer. We told you I can watch the big one for free. Late LAFC Real Salt Lake, and then stick around, of course, for MLS wrap-up, why don't you, at 12:30 Eastern time. Doyle, what's the big midweek storyline you're looking at, and then we'll get on out of here?
You go first.
Okay. It's the final day without signings. I guess I sort of set myself up there. It is also what I would call Sebas Ferreira's last stand. He just keeps scoring goals for the Houston Dynamo. It's actually the perfect situation for both the club and the player. They needed him to redeem himself and his value a little bit, and they needed goals from the number nine position. It was a disappointing draw for me this weekend for them. 1-1 at home. This is the time of year they're supposed to be picking up 3 points at home. But Ezequiel Ponce is about to come in, and Ben Olsen straight up said it. Like, I'm not playing both of them. I'm just playing one, and that makes sense with the game model. So it's not just that. It's also Coco Carrasquilla. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to one final day with teams as they are before we open up the front door to the world and both send some people out and bring a bunch more in.
Yeah, so I think that's a really good call. You know, the way we wrote it up in the outline is low-key storylines, and I have a fun one about Brian White being the only player in the top 25 in scoring who is neither TAM nor DP nor U22 initiative signing. There are 24 other guys. They're all at that level. Now, guys like Alonso Martinez, Duncan McGuire, Taniela Oluwaseyi, who's back for Minnesota. They're all knocking on the door. But as of now, there's only one guy in the top 25. But really what I'm watching is
LAFC. Can I just say, can we just pause just for the moment for Brian White's agent to clip that off real quick?
As he should. As he should. Because the dude has, like, he has 60 career goals in MLS. He has, I think, 4 double-digit goal seasons now. He's in his prime. He's clearly the talisman for Vancouver. It's a great story. But really, the storyline I'm watching is a game. I'm watching LAFC RSL. That is just such a massive game with Shield implications, with Top of the West implications, with potentially MVP implications, as both Dennis Bouanga and Chicho Arango should be on the field. Hopefully with Diego Luna making a statement again about his Olympic snub. He should have been on that team. I know neither team is going to be at full strength. I don't care. These are two great teams. I don't think either coach is going to be looking for excuses. I think both coaches coming off the losses that those teams suffered over the weekend, I think both coaches are going to be looking for blood. I think this has a chance to be an absolute banger on Wednesday night.
And speaking of bangers, Minnesota DC is not, sorry, I just couldn't help myself.
Dude, nah. That's a Tani's return. Are you kidding me?
It's not a bad game. It's, you know, Benteke, look, the beauty of it is I could watch any of these games and be happy. I will be three boxing for sure at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. Cincinnati against Chicago in Cincy, Columbus, Charlotte in Columbus, and Miami, Toronto in Miami. That's sort of the beginning of the night to say, okay, well, what's the line here? Like, are the Crew still rolling along? Games in hand, just getting stacked up with 3 points? Can Miami take advantage of what happened on the weekend? Can Cincinnati bounce back? I mean, the Shield race, the playoff races, they are heating up, folks, and we're trying to sprint into League's Cup. All right, that's it for us. Doyle, it was a pleasure, man.
You as well.
Anders? Yeah, we're getting out of here, man. All right, we'll see you on Thursday, everybody. Adios. We'll be right back.